It's time now for Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years. Your Golden Years is sponsored by Fry's Family Pharmacy and all the independent pharmacists of the Rio Grande Valley. And now it's super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years.
Welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years with yours truly this evening and every Sunday evening, 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time, and that is 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on blogtalkradio.com and directly on my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. And you can hear tonight's show again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. And the link to this podcast will be posted right after the show. For information from this show and updates about upcoming shows, again, go to drmarakarpel.com and follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Want to advertise your business? Send me an email to drmara at drmarakarpel.com. Again, that's D-R-M-A-R-A at drmarakarpel.com. Go through my website or give me a call at 512-626-6973. 512-626-6973. Tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by the bra lady, Sonia Das, helping every woman have a perky day. In Austin, call Sonia at 512-898-9058 or go to haveaperkyday.com. Tonight's show is also sponsored by Live Oak Legacies, committed to helping families capture and preserve the stories, recipes, photographs, and relics held the most dear. Find out more at liveoaklegacies.com. And today is Sunday, March 2nd, and we are live back once again in beautiful Austin, Texas, at the office of Accomplice Entertainment in the Intelligent Office Suite on the 15th floor of the Frost Bank Building on Congress Avenue. And this is show number 6 on Blog Talk Radio, and it is kind of chilly here in Austin. It was a beautiful day yesterday, and now the cold front has rolled in, and I think when we leave here tonight, it's going to be even colder. Last week, I was on beautiful, balmy South Padre Island, and I flew solo as the talk show host and production engineer, so that was my first time playing the role of production engineer. But now Art Mendoza of Accomplice Entertainment, producer of this show, is back to help with the production engineering. And along with him are Crystal and Russell. And they are working their magic tonight. So they'll be answering your calls if you call later with questions. So be sure to make them work. Give a call tonight. And if this is your first time tuning in, this show has been on live local radio in Austin, Texas on KJCE for 2 years with 92 live shows. And tonight is our 6th two-hour show here on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City and now practicing in both Austin, Texas and the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and with caregivers, and have in the past few years added the evaluation of veterans for PTSD as one of my specialties. And you can listen to the podcast of my shows from the local Austin radio, that show that went for 2 years. We have archived most of the 92 shows on my website, and we're in the process of completing the archiving. So soon you'll be able to hear all 92 shows. But if you want to check out all of the great shows that we had, the great guests, we've had quite a lineup of guests, and we'll continue here on Blog Talk Radio. And all of these shows will be archived as well. So go to my website, drmarakarpel.com. And tonight, as usual, we have a really interesting lineup of guests. In the first hour, consultant, speaker, and author of the book, Healthy Eating, Healthy World, Jim Morris Hicks will be joining us from Connecticut to talk about global warming and the sustainability of our civilization and our species through our food choices and unleashing the power of plant-based nutrition. Also in the first hour, I will be talking about caregiver stress. And then stay tuned for the second hour when Betty Strexus of the Texas Silverhaired Legislature will join us to talk about the Texas Silverhaired Legislature and what you need to know about what's happening legislatively for seniors here in Texas. And some of that may apply to some of you in other parts of the nation. Also, the founder of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation, Dr. Kathleen Hudson, will join us to talk about Texas music. And she's been on the show before when we were on local radio, and it's always interesting to talk to Kathleen, so stay tuned for that. Of course, throughout the show, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions or comments for me or my guests, please feel free to call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or if you're too shy to call and be heard on Blog Talk Radio, you can email or tweet your questions to me, and I will read them on air to my guests as long as you send them while my guests are still here. And if they have already gone off the air, then I will send the questions to them and we'll read their answers on air next week. So you can send an email to dramarkarpel.com, dramarkarpel.com, or send me a tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K. And so now before we go to our guests, I promised to talk a little bit about caregiver stress, and that's a big topic, and I think we'll be talking about it quite a bit in the weeks to come and the months to come because it's such a big topic. And, you know, there are all sorts of caregivers. There are people who are caring for their parents or loved ones either at home or those people who are just very involved in their care while their loved ones reside in a retirement community or even a nursing facility. And some caregivers even live far from the people that they care for, but are what we might call long-distance caregivers involved in the care from afar and visiting when they can. Many of these adult children are baby boomers dealing with their own issues of aging at the same time, and some of these adult children are what we might call the sandwich generation, worrying about their own children who are growing up, and who might perhaps even be boomerang children returning home after moving away because of their own financial situation. And then they are caring for their parents at the same time. And there are caregivers who are spouses caring for their longtime partner while also having to take care of their own increasing health issues. And some caregivers are other family members, siblings, nieces, nephews, and even caregivers who are caring for children who are ill. So I've been mainly focusing on situations in which the caree is an elderly person, but of course there are many situations in which the caree is a younger person with health issues or cognitive issues and are being cared for by parents, grandparents, aunts, or uncles. And the stress on caregivers, no matter the situation, the particulars of the situation, are extremely high. In fact, a recent study by AARP estimates that for the more than 40 million Americans who are caring for an elderly or disabled loved one, the total value of their work is approximately $450 billion per year. That's $450 billion with a B, $450 billion per year. And that same study also finds that those who cut back on work because of having to care for their loved one lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in income over a lifetime. Furthermore, caregivers are also more prone to depression, to physical ailments, and to social isolation. And this issue will only get bigger as the baby boom generation enters older age. And where the term that's being used right now to describe this situation is the silver tsunami, as it's a huge wave of people that are growing older and reaching their golden years. So I'd like to discuss this issue of the emotional hazards of caregiving for just a bit. So, caregivers, in their desire to provide the best possible care for their loved ones, will often put aside their own physical and emotional needs. And, you know, the emotional and physical experiences of the caregiver often involve feelings of anger, anxiety, sadness, isolation, exhaustion, and then guilt about having these feelings. But putting these feelings aside or ignoring them will not make them go away. In fact, ignoring these feelings may lead to more serious emotional distress and physical illness. So, you know, I've talked on previous shows about the consequences of depression and anxiety, and these consequences are pretty extreme, and they apply to caregivers, of course. Studies have consistently found a direct link between depression and poor health. In fact, depression has been linked to the increase of high blood pressure, increased risk of arteriosclerosis, increased risk of additional factors connected with heart attacks and strokes, and a lowered immune system in general. And anxiety or chronic stress, which certainly caregivers are dealing with chronic stress, have been found to lead to damage to almost every system of the human body. So anxiety and chronic stress has been linked to high blood pressure, migraine headaches, ulcers, depression of the reproductive system in both men and women, asthma and other respiratory conditions, diabetes. Yes, you can actually have the onset of diabetes due to increased anxiety and chronic stress. Osteoporosis, believe it or not, immune and inflammatory diseases, susceptibility to cold and flu. I'm sure that listeners out there have noticed that when they're under extreme stress, they tend to catch a lot more colds. And it can also lead to the exacerbation of immune diseases, such as cancer, and the worsening of conditions. If you already have conditions such as arthritis, chronic pain, and diabetes, and anxiety and chronic stress has been linked to the onset of depression. So it's kind of a circle there. It leads us back to depression, which leads to lower immune functioning, etc. And so the question is, do you know when you're depressed, anxious, or experiencing chronic stress? And have you taken a chance to look at yourself when you're a caregiver to see if you're experiencing these things? You know, many caregivers don't even pay attention to how they're feeling themselves. They tend to put aside their own feelings, as I mentioned earlier, and they figure, well, I will think about it later. Right now I have this person that needs my care. Except that the research has shown that very often caregivers the caree will outlast the caregiver. I'll put it that way. Many times caregivers will end up getting sick, which makes it impossible to care for the caree, the person that they're caring for. And sometimes the caregiver even will die before the person that they're caring for. So it's very important to look and see what you're experiencing. So what are some of the signs and symptoms of depression? Feelings of helplessness or hopelessness, feeling useless, inadequate, or bad, feeling self-hatred, constantly questioning your own thoughts or actions, an overwhelming need for reassurance, tending to feel vulnerable and overly sensitive, feeling intense guilt, loss of energy and motivation that makes even the simplest tasks or decisions seem difficult, and certainly engaging in self-destructive, self-harming behaviors are a sign of being depressed. Also, a sudden significant loss or gain in weight. So many people, when they're depressed, they tend to eat more, so to kind of numb their feelings. So you might notice that you've suddenly gained a lot of weight. And very often, especially with older people, older people when they're depressed will stop eating. So there's a sudden loss of a significant loss of weight. Difficulty falling asleep is a sign of depression, but also an excessive desire to sleep is also a sign of depression. Agitation or restlessness. With older people especially, this tends to be a more noticeable symptom of depression than the depressed symptoms themselves. So people tend to think that they are only anxious, but a lot of times the anxiety is due to depression. Also, difficulty concentrating. Forgetfulness can be a sign of depression. Physical aches and pains. Now, I talked about this last time, I believe, that very often older adults will go to the doctor complaining of pain when they're actually depressed. And if the doctor does not find anything and you've gone multiple times or to multiple doctors and they haven't found anything wrong with you, you might consider the idea that it is a sign of depression. And of course, suicidal thoughts are a definite sign of depression, not eating or drinking at all, and even having some hallucinations or delusional thoughts can be a sign of a severe depression. And if you're experiencing those last three symptoms, you need to seek medical attention immediately. And the other symptoms that I mentioned, if they last 2 weeks or longer, then you need to seek medical attention or psychiatric attention. And what are some of the signs of stress and anxiety? Well, increased heart rate, racing heart, increased respiration rate, so shortness of breath, shallow breathing, hyperventilation, increased blood pressure, tight muscles, headache, grinding teeth, tight stomach, sometimes chest pains, cold extremities. Now, I know I talked about this recently on a previous show. Increased sweating and increased brain activity, meaning that you're unable to focus or concentrate and your mind is running away with you thinking about all the terrible, horrible things that can happen and worrying and having racing thoughts. Also an upset stomach and butterflies in your stomach. So these are some of the symptoms of chronic stress. And it's important to look at yourself and notice if you're having them rather than ignoring your own needs again. Now, a little bit about burnout. Stress characterized by becoming overly involved and overly emotional and a feeling of a sense of urgency all the time can tend to lead to anxiety, as I mentioned, and the prolonged stress can then lead to burnout, where you stop caring. You just give up. You don't feel any emotion. You feel detached. You lack motivation. You stop being able to care for the person that you're caring for. And it kind of looks like depression. But it is something that can eventually lead to depression, and it may just be a sign of too much stress. And you need to do something to get a break in order to get your motivation back and to be the best caregiver that you can be. So what can you do? Well, first of all, as I mentioned, if you're experiencing several of the symptoms of depression for a period of 2 weeks or longer, then it's important to seek professional help, such as from your doctor or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And there is very specific, practical, stress-reducing ideas for a caregiver. So one way of preventing the stress and the burnout is to find all related information about caregiving that you can. And this will help to increase your feeling of power or your ability to control the situation and reduce your feelings of helplessness. It's also important to be practical with the goals you set for your loved one and for yourself. Understand that caregiving is often stressful, and don't be critical of yourself when you're feeling stressed out or irritable, because that will only increase your stress. If you feel angry, you need to admit that you're feeling angry and talk to somebody about it. Stay in touch with your friends as much as possible. Don't isolate yourself. Don't give up being involved in activities that you can enjoy. And I know that sounds kind of difficult when you're a caregiver and you have somebody that you're taking care of 24 hours a day. So it's very important to ask for help so that you might have the time to be able to do this. Which brings us to the next tip, which is take advantage of respite services that are available for you and your loved one. Also, sometimes keeping a caregiver journal can be helpful, and this may involve writing down practical things, such as what you've discovered during the day to be helpful with your caregiving, and what you've also discovered to be less helpful. And this may also involve writing down your feelings and your experiences as a way to ventilate them. And very importantly, join a support group. A support group can be extremely powerful in reducing stress. So I'm going to take a break here, and we're going to take a little break and come back with our guest. And after our guest, I will come back to some more caregiver tips. So after the break, we have Jim Morris Hicks, who will be talking about global warming and the sustainability of our civilization and our species through our food choices and unleashing the power of plant-based nutrition. So you're going to want to listen to this. I think that Jim has some really interesting ideas that you might not have heard before, and we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments. So give a call. It's toll free, 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or send me a tweet with your question to MARAEK or an email to Dr. Mara, DRMARA, at drmarakarpel.com, DRMARAKARPEL. So come right back. Thank you. And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And now joining us from Connecticut, author, speaker, and consultant, Jim Morris Hicks. Now, just a little bit about Jim. In 2002, after a career in business as a management consultant and senior corporate executive, Jim Hicks began a study of what we eat from a global perspective, discovering many startling issues along the way. And he has documented his findings in his powerful book, Healthy Eating, Healthy World. And this evening, Jim joins us to talk about global warming and the sustainability of our civilization and our species through our food choices and unleashing the power of plant-based nutrition. And again, we're taking your calls with questions and comments, and you can give a call toll-free at 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can send your question to me, and I will read them to Jim on the air. You can send it to me via tweet to M-A-R-A-E-K or to my email at drmara@drmarakarpel.com. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
How are things up in the Northeast? Are you snowed in?
No, we're kind of between storms. I think we've got a little storm tonight, but it's in March now, and spring's only 19 days away.
Right. So hopefully it will warm up a little bit.
Right.
So Jim, I was reading your blogs on your website, and really interesting stuff. And I know that you originally started looking at healthy eating, and when you came out with your book talking about healthy eating and the health on our body, so. Recently, you then shifted over to more of an emphasis on how our eating affects the sustainability of our civilization. What caused you to make that shift?
Well, that's a good question, and it's one that I think about all the time these days. When I wrote the book, when I first started studying the topic of health in 2003, I read 30 or 40 books over the first 6 months. And then in the seventh month, I believe it was, I read two books that brought in the effects on the environment in terms of what we're eating. And I'd already concluded that the whole food plant-based diet is probably what we should be eating for our health. But after reading two books over the same weekend, Memorial Day in 2003, I came to the conclusion that I've later called my blinding flash of the obvious, which was, oh, my God, we're eating the wrong food. And then over the years, in the subsequent years, I've been making it my business to meet the leaders in the field of healthy eating and also environment, people like John Robbins and Dr. Colin Campbell, Dr. Esselstyn, many others in the field. But only recently, I guess it was summer of 2012, and this is long after my book came out, where I did talk about healthy eating and its impacts on our health and the environment, but I never really got to the point of worrying about the sustainability of the human species until later. And I go back to an article I read in the New York Times. It was by Mark Bittman in the summer of 2012. It was called The Endless Summer, I think, and it had a picture with that article that showed the Statue of Liberty with water up to her shoulders. And he was talking about the fact that if we didn't get climate change addressed properly, that every coastal city in the world would be partially underwater by 2100. So I got to thinking,
wow.
You know, 2100 is not that far away in geological time, not like some apocalypse that's going to come along millions of years from now. And I got to thinking, you know, I've got five people alive today, my grandchildren, that are going to probably be alive in 2100. And just last week, I added the sixth grandchild, and she will turn 86 in the year 2100.
Wow.
And the more I learned about it, I studied about Easter Island and what happened to their civilization back in around 1500 AD. And they had basically done what we're doing. They used up all of their finite resources, and their civilization eventually collapsed. And when the Dutch discovered them on Easter Sunday of 1722, they had basically resorted to cannibalism. The civilization was no more, and it was almost like a hell on earth. And that's essentially, I believe, what is taking place on a global basis today.
Wow. Okay. So what do our food choices have to do with this?
Well, I'm going to go back to the UN report of 2006. It was published by the Food and Agriculture Organization arm of the UN back in 2006. It was entitled Livestock's Long Shadow. It was the same year that Al Gore's movie came out, Inconvenient Truth, about global warming. But in this UN report, they stated that all of transportation accounts for something like 13% of the human-induced contribution to global warming. And that's a big number, right? 13% of all human-induced activities. Except that livestock was cited by the UN in this report as causing 18% of global warming. So that means it's almost 40-50% more than all cars, trains, buses, trucks in the world combined. And secondly, it would be real difficult for us to make much of a dent. In fact, even reduce even slightly the amount that we spend on transportation. Because even though our cars in the U.S. and Europe are getting more efficient, there's millions of people in the developing world that are starting to drive for the first time. So we are still going backward when it comes to getting fossil fuel consumption under control. But with our food, almost anybody can change what they eat overnight. And the simple fact is that livestock is causing more global warming than all transportation combined, and simply by changing what we eat, we can eliminate that. The numbers that I use are that compared to a plant-based diet of whole plant calories, on a per-calorie basis, it takes 10 times more land, 10 times more water, and 10 times more energy to produce meat, dairy, egg, and fish calories. So to me, it's just a blinding flash of the obvious, and I'm working daily, spending most of my waking hours thinking about this, writing about it, trying to enlist support from organizations and powerful individuals. It's just such a simple concept, yet we hear almost nothing about it from our leaders.
So maybe you can clarify, because some listeners might be kind of scratching their heads, how the livestock, so you're saying the production of food from livestock, the use of energy and land contributes to the global warming. Do the livestock themselves contribute to global warming?
Well, they do, but it's not their fault. What's contributing to global warming is the human demand for the livestock products, the meat, dairy, eggs, and fish, as I summarize. And by taking 10 times as much land, right now, even according to the Livestock Association, they say that 45% of the land in the world is used to grow animals for our dinner tables. We are wiping out 20 million or more acres per year of rainforest, and most of that is being taken to either grow soybeans and other food for livestock or to graze livestock. So we're destroying the lungs of the earth, which is the rainforest, to grow feed in the Amazon. We're growing soybeans that we pack it up and ship it to China to feed pigs. I mean, it's just if you were looking from outer space at what's going on this planet, you say those people have lost their minds. They're using all of their resources. They're running out of land. We're adding 230,000 people to our population every day. We're running out of water, and everybody, every country, you know, we have a United Nations out there that's supposed to be looking after all of us, but they really don't have the ability to enforce anything. And all of the countries, basically, it's every man for himself. You know, we're staking out our claim to this and that. And as the worst effects from global warming take place, you know, they're forecasting that we're going to have climate migrants. That's people who can no longer live in their country because it's flooded, like Bangladesh, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be in little boats drifting around the world trying to find a bite to eat. And they're going to
wow.
show up on our shorelines. And, you know, one book that I refer to often is a book called 10 Billion by Dr. Stephen Emmott in the UK. He's the head of computational science for Microsoft, and he's a professor at Oxford. But he said there's a new group of category of attendee at the climate conferences around the world that he attends on a regular basis, and that new group is the military. Because all over the world, every country knows that as we run out of land, water, and food, particularly water, you know, we can live without food for 40 days. You know, people fast it all the time, and I've tried fasting myself, and after 3 days, it's pretty easy to live without food, just as long as you get enough water. But we can't live 2 days without water. And
wow.
over a billion people are thirsty, go to bed thirsty every night today, and that's growing. Much of the
wow.
food that we grow for these animals comes from water that is drawn from underground aquifers. And in 18 countries that comprise over 60% of the global population, we are over-pumping the aquifers. That means that water, once it is gone, it is gone. We're pumping it far beyond the rate of replenishment. And that's happening
right.
in the United States and all over the world. And when
wow.
when that water's gone, you can't irrigate crops that are currently being grown primarily to feed the cows, pigs, chickens. And then when you think
yes.
that on top of all of this, the whole food plant-based diet enables people to reverse their heart disease, prevent cancer, reverse some cancers, stop some cancers. It is such a an amazing win-win-win, but yet there's a lot of powerful interests that are out there
yes.
in the form of money that prevent this topic from even making it to the table for discussion.
Now, I know, you know, I sent you an email about this back in 1980 when I was first looking into becoming a vegetarian. I read the book Diet for a Small Planet.
Yes.
Now, back then, when that was written in 1971, the issue of global warming was not, and nobody was talking about it, so she didn't,
right.
the author did not talk about that, and she didn't talk about the water because we thought we would have water forever. But it was. But one of these issues was something that you brought up, and that was making the food supply last and being able to feed more people. And she
right.
said that we would be able to feed more people if people did not eat meat.
Exactly.
One of the problems with that book was that she suggested ways of getting protein and
right.
suggested that you had to mix all kinds of these fancy combinations of foods in order to get the correct amount of protein, and that really is not true. So,
and I think she came back later and basically acknowledged
yes.
that was bad information. And that's unfortunate, but, it, you know, we all make mistakes and we get the wrong information.
Yeah.
But we now know
that
the whole food plant-based diet is sufficient.
So
I'm sorry,
what about
did I interrupt?
Protein? That's
well,
okay, because we have a little bit of a delay. So when we talk,
oh, okay.
we might
Sorry.
Interrupt. How do people get protein? I know there are people that are thinking, well, no, I can't do a plant-based diet because we need to have protein. So what would
well,
you
I'm,
say?
I'm glad you asked that question because I have concluded that our single biggest problem is what I refer to as the protein myth. And that protein myth is believed by 90% of our medical practitioners, 90% of our scientists, even our food scientists, 90% of our senators, our Congress, our heads of state around the world. I truly believe most of those people believe that we need to eat at least some animal protein to be healthy. And therefore, if you go to your doctor, chances are 90% that he or she is going to tell you that it's not going to encourage you to embrace a vegan diet or a totally plant-based diet because of their understanding is that we need to eat animal protein. And that just simply is not true. You know, the strongest animals in the world, elephants, giraffes, hippopotamus, horses, eat nothing but raw plants. I have a little speech that I give kind of explaining my blinding flash of the obvious and the fact that we only need to eat plants. And it just makes you want to scream because it is so simple. Back to protein for a second. Dr. Campbell and I talk about this often. He's the author of the China Study, and I sit on his board of directors at the Center for Nutrition Studies in Ithaca, New York. And he said somehow protein got to be revered as soon as it was discovered, like over 100 years ago. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is there's only three macronutrients. There's protein, there's fat, there's carbohydrate. We need all three of them, but we need more carbohydrate. It's about an 80-10-10 is the ideal mix of those three, and 80% carbohydrate, 10% protein, and 10% fat. But what most people don't understand is almost every plant in the grocery store produce aisle has protein in it. And the only way we could not get enough protein is not get enough calories. But this is a myth that's been perpetrated, and we have to address that myth. We have to figure out a way to create the awareness out there that we don't need to eat it. And, in fact, it's killing us. It's destroying our health by eating too much animal protein. And the environment, the sustainability issues are just you cannot ignore those anymore.
Now, of course, there are some better ways of getting the carbohydrates and the calories then, and some worse ways, right? Like some things that you wouldn't just go out and eat a bunch of bread.
Right. You know, most people have these terms, vegan and vegetarian. I don't particularly like either one of those terms because they only describe a little bit about what you're not eating. They don't describe what you are eating. And as I travel around, I find an awful lot of self-described vegetarians are eating a pretty crummy diet. We call them junk food vegans or junk food vegetarians. And the healthiest foods are the kind you find in the produce aisle, the whole, unprocessed, plant-based foods. And those include things like the grains and legumes that are very inexpensive on a per-calorie basis. I almost every day have large orders of some kind of wild rice, brown rice, quinoa, the grains and legumes, where I get a bulk of my calories, but then I load up with the greens and all the fresh vegetables and produce that I can get to make up for a great medley of nutrients. But it's also a myth that it costs a lot of money.
I'm sorry. I wanted to know how long you've been eating like that.
Well, I learned about it in 2003, and I immediately concluded that I agreed with Dr. Esselstyn. Dr. Esselstyn is the Cleveland Clinic former surgeon who basically had a theory that we could prevent most diseases if we ate the right diet. And he later conducted a study worked out to be 17 terminal heart patients. And those 17 patients, prior to the study that he did, the 8 years prior to that study, had 49 cardiac events between them, you know, 17 people, 49 cardiac events. In the 8 years following the intervention, and the only intervention they made was to have them change their diet to whole food, plant-based foods, in the next 8 years, they had zero cardiac events.
Wow.
So he successfully reversed heart disease in 49 patients, and so that's kind of when I said, you know, that diet's good enough for me. Whole food, plant-based, and I came up with my own scoring system.
So would you say that your health has and energy have been better since you went on this diet?
Yeah, I did not start out because I had any health problems. I just got curious one day, and it's a long story about why I got curious. But when I started studying it, and it was at a time when you could go to Amazon and the internet and find a lot of information quickly, and I started reading about a new book every 2 or 3 days, and I was getting almost angry at what I was learning about the wrong way we're eating. And so I went ahead, and once I discovered Dr. Esselstyn and Campbell and Joel Fuhrman and John McDougall and a few others that I got to know in years later, but I concluded that they had the right idea, and that's kind of what I've patterned my emphasis on since then.
Right. But you haven't had any negative consequences
protein no I high. When I first started made the switch, I probably weighed about 180 pounds and I I quickly went down below 160 and pretty much stayed there for the last 12 years now, and all kind of positive things started happening in my body in terms of my sleeping, my eliminations and frequency of colds and things like that. I suddenly realized that there's no reason for me to go to a doctor unless I have an accident. And so I don't go to doctors unless I have an accident, because simple fact that I know more about promoting health than they do. They only manage disease, and if I don't have a disease to be managed, I don't need to go there.
Right, okay. And you haven't had a protein deficiency of any sort?
I have had no protein deficiency. I'm 69 years old. I run, I jog, I work out, I ski, I do a lot of things, and
that's great.
I don't go to the doctor because I just don't see any value for me. But I'm not recommending that people stop going to the doctor. Everyone has to make their own decisions. I've made mine.
Right. Now you were touching on something just a little bit before we get back to this global warming issue, and that was the cost of eating a whole food plant-based diet. You were saying that it's easy to do it without spending a lot of money.
Yes. I wrote a blog or two on that topic, and I went and did my own research, and I counted the calories in a bag of beans, let's say, you know, the black beans that come in a bag that are dried, or the calories that come in a bag of brown rice. And if that is things like that, if they become the centerpiece of my meal, that's where I'm getting most of my calories from, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And the beans, for example, have an awful lot of protein, but I don't worry about protein any more than I worry about carbohydrates. I just eat a whole food plant-based diet, and nature took care of making the balance just right for us. But I computed cost per 100 calories, and for beans and rice, it's in the order of 15 or 20 cents per 100 calories.
Wow.
So if I'm getting a bulk of my calories from those things, then I add in my spinach. You can eat a big pile of spinach and only have about 10 calories in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get your calories from somewhere. And people don't want to eat too much fruit because they feel like they'll get too much sugar. So I try to get mine from the grains and legumes and potatoes and the starches, as Dr. McDougall would say. And then I'll spruce it up with asparagus and tomato and eggplant and whatever is fresh and in season in the grocery store. And I think, and when I go out to dinner, I generally will order a few sides, and my meal is generally about half of what the average entree in a restaurant is. So I feel like every time I go out, I save at least $15 compared to what I would have eaten in the past or what everybody else at the table tends to eat. And when I'm with a group of people, I started bringing the correct change in my pocket because I get tired of paying for people's $40 meals when mine is $20, you know.
That is a great tip in and of itself.
Yeah, I've got $300 in my pocket at all times, and I can make the exact change for anything down to $1. That is.
There you go. All right, so Jim, we're going to take a quick break. We have a lot more to talk about. But I want to give people a chance to get to their phones if they have questions or to send an email with any questions. So let's take a quick break, and we will be right back. So listeners, if you have questions, give a call at 855-345-4720. Send me a tweet to MARAEK or an email to Dr. Mara at drmaracarpell.com, and we'll be back with Jim Hicks. Come right back.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmaracarpell.com. Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpell is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpell, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
If you despise bra shopping in the stores, have a complimentary bra fitting at your home or office. It's so convenient. And with 13 styles, including a no-wire bra and 52 sizes A through H cup, Sonia Das, the bra lady, has the bra that's just right for you. What are you waiting for? Call to schedule your personal fitting today and find out what all the ladies love about essential bodywear. Call 512-981-8788 or preview the products at haveaperkyday.com and have a perky day.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, I am speaking with author, speaker, consultant Jim Hicks about the sustainability of civilization through our food choices, and we're taking your questions and comments at 855-345-4720 or at Twitter at MARAEK or at email drmara@drmaracarpell.com. So, Jim, if eating plants is so great for our health and it's probably the quickest, easiest way for us to reduce global warming, why don't we hear about this from environmental groups?
That's a very good question, and one that's that I've been further enlightened on just recently. And there's a documentary that's coming out on June 1st that delves into that, and I have seen it. Basically, this young man goes around and he asks various environmental groups about global warming because he had just learned that some scientists are saying that as much as 51% or more of the global warming human-induced activities could be from livestock. And he's asking So it's somewhere, let's say, between 18 and 51 or more, but it is a huge piece of the equation. And so he's got these people on video, and he's asking them why. Well, first of all, most of them wouldn't agree to even meet with him, but the ones that did were careful not to say very much about livestock. And so, but then he got Michael Pollan to sit down with him, and he said on camera, he said, "Well, I think what they probably did is they focus grouped it, and it's a political loser to be identified as anti-meat, and it would hurt their fundraising."
Okay. Oh,
now,
wow.
You think about that. Just think about that. I've long suspected that to be true, and I agree with Michael Pollan, but that's something that's hard to prove. But just like you go to the American Cancer Society website, you won't find a single thing on there about what is the best thing I can do to prevent cancer in terms of diet. You've got to really dig.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to dig to find it on the American Heart Association. And if you go to any large environmental group, you will not find any mention of changing your diet to eat more plants, even though it's the single biggest driver of global warming. So what good is it going to do those environmental groups to be sitting with a pile of cash, paying all their executives, to continue telling us a watered-down version of the truth? And they're not telling us enough truth to save our civilization. And we're on the path down the road of what happened at Easter Island. And I think the answer here has got to be leadership. And back in this summer, I reached out after seeing James Cameron, the famous movie producer. I saw him on a number of his videos, and I know that he saw the Forks Over Knives movie in 2012, and immediately he and his wife cleaned out their kitchen and haven't eaten anything that wasn't a plant since then. And
great
so
movie,
I know of his,
by the way.
I know he's walking the walk out there. He's talking the talk when it comes to plant-based eating. So I wrote him a letter on September 5th and asked for a meeting with myself and Dr. Campbell, T. Colin Campbell. And 10 hours later, I got a response inviting us to dinner in his Malibu home the next week. He since hosted a conference at another one of his at his ranch in Santa Barbara. And, you know, as we told him, I told him that night, the first night I met him, I said, "Look, Dr. Campbell and I concluded that you are the most influential person in the world that totally gets it about food and food's impact on our health and our environment and sustainability." And he first said, "Well, I don't know about that." And I said, "Well, how many other people who get it about food have as much influence on the world stage as you do?" And he said, "You know, you may be right." you may be right.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, he's a great man, and he's, you know, he's got a full-time job, you know, making the next three sequels to Avatar. But my feeling is that in my background as an executive recruiter, that I feel like I've been in the leadership business. And in my career, almost every problem that I've ever encountered in business is in some way, shape, or form a leadership problem. And so I'm trying to use those skills to reach out to people like James Cameron. And most recently, I'm reaching out to Ted Turner. And I've just finished reading his latest biography. I met with his daughter in Atlanta a few weeks ago. And although Ted is not enlightened about food, he is extremely enlightened about the environment. He gave $1 billion to the United Nations. He's an incredible man that like so many other people, have not been told the truth about the most serious problems that we face on this planet. And I think that once he understands the truth, as I do, I think he's going to be one mad cowboy, and I think he can make a lot of noise around the world. He's got the pulpit I don't have.
So you have a lot of powerful people working with you at this point.
Well,
getting,
I'm reaching out.
Them on board.
I'm trying to reach. I'm trying to. That's what I do. I'm trying to attract powerful leadership that can spread this message much more quickly than I can. The scientists are saying that we're approaching some tipping points with this climate change thing, and if we don't get the trends reversed in the next 4 or 5 years, we're beyond being able to reverse them. And then the emphasis shifts away from mitigation to adaptation. In other words, we're going to have to learn to adapt to sea levels 10 feet higher than they are now. And weather changing and running out of water and all of the things that are going to happen. So I think, you know, when you're talking about the most serious topic in the history of humanity, then it deserves to get mentioned by the most powerful people in the most powerful ways. So I prefer to be an optimist here, but I also have to be a realist. And so that picture of the of the Statue of Liberty underwater, you know, prompted me to write a blog the next week that says, "Forget saving the planet, think great grandchildren." And what I meant by forget saving the planet is the planet's been around for 4 billion years. And if you cram that 4 billion years into just 1 year that she's, this is the way I explained it to the sixth grade class in New London, Connecticut, the human species has only been here the last 26 minutes of the last hour of that 1 year. And we have completely taken over every square inch. We're burning down all of these natural things like rainforests. And, you know, we have to make some dramatic changes. And the single biggest thing we can do quickly, it's the only thing we can do quickly, is change our diet. We can't get population under control very quickly. It takes decades, if not centuries, to do that, and we can't get our overconsumption over control. The way our entire economy and global economy works is all based on maximizing consumption in a finite world. But we can't fix that quickly, and we don't have much time, so the only thing we can do that will make a huge difference, and I asked several scientists this question, if the top 2 billion wealthiest people in the world, and those are the people that are eating most of the meat, dairy, eggs, and fish, if they suddenly replace 75% of their meat-based calories with plant-based, what impact would that have on the environment? And they told me you'd need a study to compute it exactly, but it would have a huge positive effect on the environment.
Well, that brings me to my next question that I received from a listener. How long would you see? How long would it take for there to be a change if people did stop eating meat? How long would it take?
Well, you know, that depends on how many leaders. You know, if you get one Ted Turner, who basically is the man that donated the $1 billion that set up the UN Foundation. He's got global power, and he is not afraid to call out every congressman. He's been sending environmental books by Lester Brown to every congressman for decades now. He is really Mr. Environment, but yet he doesn't understand the single biggest problems, the causes of the single biggest problems we have in the environment. And I believe that once he understood, I got to believe, he's a man of great courage and integrity, and he's got great influence. So in answer to the listener's question, if he were able to walk in Bill Gates' office and say, "Bill, we got to spend $10 or $20 billion, and we got to let the world know about this within the next 6 months, and buy a lot of advertising and get social media geared up," and you know, I think it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of leadership to get that word out quick enough. But every single individual that gets the message and believes it can change their diet. You don't have to wait 6 months or a year. They're saying to revamp our entire energy structure would take 20 years and $18 trillion. And we don't have that kind of time, nor have we even really started in earnest on working on that. So that leaves only one option to address climate change in any meaningful way, and that's changing what we eat.
Mm-hmm. So then the average citizen can have an impact on the environment.
The average citizen can change tomorrow, and if they don't want to go totally vegan, they can replace 80% of their meat, dairy calories. You know, I think I have a four-leaf scoring system in my book, and at the four-leaf level, you're getting over 80% of your calories from whole plants. And that's what I try to encourage people to do. I don't like the vegan words because I think they're negative. But try to stress the positive and maximize your percent of calories from the positive. Do your body a favor, do the planet a favor, and do your grandchildren a favor.
So even if people didn't become strictly vegan or, you know, using the V word, they could still have an impact by making it a pretty, you know, making the meat a significantly smaller part of their diet.
Yes, and I think the more they learn about the health benefits, the more they will want to eat almost no meat, dairy, eggs, or fish. I don't have any desire for them anymore, although occasionally, like yesterday, someone ordered my lunch for me, and I know that it was some kind of panini, and I tasted some cheese or dairy somewhere in that thing. But, you know, I don't worry about that because 90% of the time I'm eating my four-leaf meals in my home or somewhere else, and I'm experiencing the health benefits, and I know it's doing great things for the environment.
Yeah, but, you know, I had Dr. Furman on the show in the fall, and he was talking about how just what you said, that, you know, cutting it down to where at least 80% of what you're eating is plant-based, and then your taste buds actually change, and you start liking the plant-based food much more than the meat. So you don't really feel like...
Yes, I totally agree with Joel on that.
So Jim, if people are interested in finding out more about what you're doing and reading your really interesting blogs and reading your book, how can they do that?
Well, it's five letters, and the acronym is Healthy Planet, J. Morris Hicks, HPJMH.com. And I have just summarized the most powerful, most recent blogs on this topic of sustainability, all featured on the homepage. I've got a store link where you can find all the books that you'll need. And can buy on Amazon, and I've got lots of videos, and so it's getting seen in over 200 countries a month now. The website, it's HP and the acronym Healthy Planet, J. Morris Hicks, HPJMH.com.
Okay, HPJMH.com, and I will post that on my website and on my Facebook page, so people didn't get a pen and paper in time, they can find it on my website. And if people wanted to contact you, can they do that through your website?
Yes, and my email is jmorrishicks@me.com, me.com.
J. Morris Hicks, and that's H-I-C-K-S, at me.com.
And Morris is M-O-R-R-I-S, jmorrishicks at me.com.
Okay.
And I even have my phone number on the website. I figured I'd just make myself as available as possible. If it gets to be a problem, I'll take it off, but it hasn't become a problem. So
I
just got it all hanging out there. I haven't been sued yet either, but that's going to happen eventually, I imagine.
Well, that's all part of being, and, you know, coming out and saying something that people haven't heard before.
Part of being an activist.
Exactly. So this has been really interesting. I am so glad that we were able to schedule this and get you on the show, because I think that you've said some things that a lot of people have not heard before, and hopefully you've piqued some interest in what you're talking about, and people will really think, you know, seriously about making some changes for their own health and the health of the world that we're in.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you, and I look forward to returning someday.
Yes, I would love to have you back on the show and give us an update about how you're doing with this whole thing and who else has gotten on board.
All right. So,
well, you have a very good evening. Stay safe and stay warm.
Okay. And thanks again. Good evening.
And after the break, I will be talking more about caregiver stress, and then Betty Strexas of the Texas Silverhair Legislature will be joining us. So come right back. And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel in your golden years on blogtalkradio.com and also on my website, drmarakarpel.com. And we are back with Betty Strexas, who has been previously a regular on my local Austin radio show. And she's joining us to talk about the Texas Silverhaired Legislature and what's been going on legislatively for seniors here in Texas, and this may also be relevant to seniors all around the nation. And we're taking your call. So if you have a question for Betty, please feel free to give a call. It's toll-free, 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can send me a tweet or an email. And the Twitter account is M-A-R-A-E-K. An email is drmara@drmarakarpel.com, and I will read your question out loud to Betty on the air. So, Betty, are you there?
I'm here. Dr. Karpel, thank you so much for inviting me to join you again.
And
I'm always happy
to be here. I'm so glad to have you back. It's been a while since you've been on my show.
Well, you've been busy, and so have we. You said that... You said I'd have an opportunity to talk about what's been going on with seniors, and I just love telling you that three big things have been going on with us. Number one, we're getting older, and number two, there's more of us, and number three, we're not going to be quiet about it. We're fighting for our rights to remain self-sufficient, self-serving, and dignified. And there are a lot of things that we need from our legislature in order to accomplish that. I was rereading some of the things that the silver-haired legislature has done in the past. And one thing that we're very interested in, and something that I don't think a lot of people address, is caregiver situations. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I know, Doctor, yeah, you have elderly parents. And
I
am going to tell you never to assume that one is more the caregiver than the other, because when you grow old together, as my husband and I have, we are care sharing. Joe does
mm-hmm.
tasks that I can't do, and I pick up things that he can't do. And so a lot of respect is owed to people that have grown up together, and we don't ask for a lot of help until we really become infirm. But I was looking at some figures. In 2009, it's hard to believe this, but there were 35,900,000 United States citizens older than the age 65. 35 million. And that's astonishing. Well, you know, there's a lot of needs in that number, a lot of needs.
Well, you know,
and that's,
you know what they're calling it, Betty? They're calling it the silver tsunami.
It is. It is. And those baby boomers like me and some of my colleagues are responsible for are they're the ones that are hitting the shore right now. And they're hitting it in a tsunami effect. But the silver-haired legislature is working hard to provide for the needs of the citizens of Texas. We have 4 million Texans over the age of 60. And, you know, Texans, we're not a very quiet group, so we're making waves wherever we can. And it's an interesting time right now because you know what Tuesday is? It's Election Day. And I've been, in fact, you know, I write a little column for the Galveston Daily News, the oldest newspaper in Texas. And I'm so honored.
I didn't know you wrote a column.
I do.
I didn't know
that. I write a column. Well, it runs different days. That I address senior issues. And right now, of course, I'm encouraging people to vote. But my column yesterday told people to look at what their own legislators have done and let that influence their decision, number one. And number two, look at what they said they would do. And if they didn't do it, let that color their decisions. And that's two good ways to say, well, I am going to vote for this person because they showed integrity, number one, and number two, they proved their interest in seniors. So that is an important thing. When you get to be our age, you have to depend on the state legislature to look at what the needs are. And the TSHL, the acronym for Texas Silver-Haired Legislature, right now we are writing resolutions. And resolutions are the format in which we present the needs that are brought to us by our colleagues. And there are over 100 of us through the state of Texas, and you've met many of us, and we represent. You know, I represent Harris County. Well, that's the largest county, third largest in the United States, first in Texas.
Wow.
And you can imagine the diversity of needs in a county like mine. But when you look at the state entirely, you know that the needs are vast. And we depend on each other to find those needs among our fellow seniors and address those in the format that we call resolutions, and they're simple. They have to be simply worded and one page in order to take those to the state legislature, which will be, the primary will be Tuesday, and of course they'll have the final election in November, and we'll know who the 84th Texas legislature will be. And we are going to be prepared to take our directives to them after, in June, and we will be showing mm-hmm. them what the needs are that have been presented to us. Healthcare needs are a big issue, and, you know, that's my field. Mm-hmm. So I write on things that surround healthcare, like we need more geriatricians,
yes.
and we need we need more clear billing. We need bills that come to us after care that are simple and that don't come to us, not that we're simple, not by any means. In fact, our largest group of professionals in TSHL are retired teachers, and we have many retired military, medical professionals, lawyers, ranchers, farmers, insurance people, utility people, and we're able to address the problems that seniors like us are faced with, and we recognize those problems because they're ours. They belong to us.
Right.
And so, yeah, we're going to fight for them. And you know that
well,
we do.
Well, you know, the people. But I do know that you do, and I was going to make a point that I think that the people that are running for various offices need to do what is important for seniors, because aren't seniors one of the largest voting groups?
They are. They are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead of the dirty politics that we're seeing right now, which are that's very distressful for seniors. We feel that that's a waste of time. They need to be addressing what they will do for us, not doing all the little petty things that it seems to be part of American politics. And I don't mean it's it's peculiar or rare only in Texas. It's everywhere. And I wish they would grow up. I just wish they would grow up and be like the children that we thought we raised and listen to the problems, use their energy and their money in helping us provide for these needs that we have. And we do need to have better education for medical personnel, and we need to address transportation needs. For those seniors out in West Texas, good grief, they don't have ways to go places. And we need to, but let me quickly tell you the things that we have accomplished. As a voice united in going to the state legislators, we have accomplished tax freeze in school taxes, not just a freeze, but now we ask that any time taxes are lowered, that ours are lowered also. That's really a big one for people over 60. We ask that we ask the legislature to give more in out-of-pocket, in help for people that are without income. Those are the people that live in Medicaid, nursing homes. They have no income at all, and most of them have no visitors. And we have raised the money that the state gives those people. I know that all of your listeners have seen the silver alerts on the LED signs on the highway. That's an important one. You know, until the silver-haired legislature got involved in that, an adult that went missing had to wait, or their family had to wait 48 hours before law officials would step in and search for them. And now the minute it's called in that a senior has gone missing, law gets busy looking for them. And in the first year, I may be a little off, but I think that about 145 people were found very quickly the first year that legislation was passed. So,
and for listeners outside of Texas, the silver alert is the same thing as an amber alert, except that it's for seniors.
It is the same thing. And now you won't see silver alert on those LED signs. You see missing elderly. And you don't see amber alert. You see missing child. The reason for that is because other coalitions came forward and said, well, we want something for missing of a handicap or So the state did, they passed the legislature to just quickly get the LED sign lit up so that motorists would see it and describe who had actually gone missing.
Oh, that's
great. Healthcare is so important, too. Mm-hmm. And I know that all of us know someone that lost their doctor because their doctor has quit taking Medicare patients. And I know there's a lot of ethics in the medical profession. And, you know, I'm a retired nurse, but many doctors, and they have the right to say, I won't take Medicare anymore. But they also have kept the patients that were already in their service, as my husband and I were. We had been a long time in a group practice, and they did send out notices that they would not be accepting new Medicare patients. Well, I think that that is distressful for any person that is looking for a practice that they can call their home care, but you think about a person that's 59 years old and they've gone to a group practice for 7 or 8 years and all of a sudden they get a notice that that group practice will not accept Medicare. Well, what are they going to do in 2 or 3 more years when they hit the magic number? So it's a very serious and certainly disheartening feeling. So they have to look, and a lot of them just have to close their eyes and open the phone book and hope they find a good physician. Right. And so I have written a resolution asking that all physicians during their medical school education are required to have geriatric rated into all the other subjects they take. So if they're taking orthopedics, they need to have one part of that that's focused on old bones. And if there's hematology, then one section that is devoted to geriatric patients who do crop up with anemias that younger people don't have. And so those are the issues that I'm hoping the legislature will pass into law, and I hope that we'll be supported by the Texas Medical Association. They're a good group, and they're interested in us. And while I'm on that about people being interested, we work with a lot of other coalitions in this state. We work with the Texas Coalition of Texans with Disabilities. We work hand in hand on so many issues, and individually even more. Of course, we work with the Silver-Haired Congress, which is composed of silver-haired legislators from many states, although more states do not have a silver-haired legislature than those who do. And, you know, you'd think that every state would want to have it. I have a daughter that just turned 50 that lives in Tennessee, and they do not have a silver-haired legislature, and she's already working on it with a friend who is a representative in Tennessee. So by the time she's 60,
I have a I have a feeling this is going to become a popular thing, you know, around the country. So in Texas, for those listeners who are listening in Texas, how can they get involved in the Texas Silver-Haired Legislature or find out more about it if they live in another state and want to bring it to their own state?
Right. Well, the best thing to do is call probably the Department of Aging and Disability if they're from another state, and they can give you phone numbers to reach. We have a website. That's the best thing, and it's txshl.org, and that has the tabs to take them into any of the interest areas, membership, officers, resolutions, all of those things that we as Silver-Haired Legislature are active in. But if it's a person that lives in Texas, a good way to find out about us is to call their area agency on aging, because mm-hmm. we work directly with them, and in fact, that's our elections to run for the Silver-Haired Legislature are conducted through the area agencies on aging. We have a very good relationship, and those organizations, there are 28, and they're very evenly located through the state, and they work under the Department of Aging and Disability. So our
a great agency.
No, the Department
the area
of Aging.
Agency on Aging. Yep.
Pardon?
And it's all over the country. The Area
oh,
Agency
yeah.
on Aging is all over the country. So
absolutely. It's required
agency.
By federal law. And
right.
So, yeah, and I'm a member of our Area Agency on Aging's Advisory Board, which is a very interesting group. You can learn so much. And if people don't want to be in the Silver-Haired Legislature but would just like to know what's going on in their particular county, then I would say contact the Area Agency on Aging and get involved with Meals on Wheels or
okay.
any of the other. That's the most needed area of helping
yeah.
people. But also there's many other areas that you can volunteer your time, computer
mm-hmm.
help, act help, all sorts of things that would use anyone's talents or years of experience. The Silver-Haired Legislature does demand travel into Austin, and we aren't paid, so everything we spend is out of our own pocket, so we have to have supportive spouses, and
right.
then we have to give willingly of our time, and we do. Once in a while, someone will run for election and then find out that it isn't what they wanted at all, or
right.
it was a bit more costly than they felt they could handle. And certainly seniors have to be very cognizant of where their money is spent. So,
sure,
and
sure.
You don't arrive at age 60 with nothing to do. It's a rare person
right.
that doesn't have a few things on their plate. And,
yes.
You know, yeah, so you have to say, well, have I got the time to do this? Have I got the money? And have I got the physical
right.
stamina to go to Austin and testify before legislative committees? Do I have the stamina to, like I drive 3 hours and to go there and sit in a committee meeting, yes, I've got the stamina. By golly, I've got the willpower. Dr. Janet is the commissioner of the Department of Aging and Disability, our Health and Human Services
right.
at this time.
And
he appointed me to the Committee on Medicaid Managed Care, which is important in our state
okay.
because Texans are running their own Medicaid. Thank you. And we will take care of those people.
Betty, I'm getting the sign from the producer. So
I hope it's not the evil eye. You tell him
no.
that I have appreciated being on the show, and I know you have
okay.
other guests, and I've been delighted to be one of your guests, Dr.
And
Popel.
I will have you back on the show to talk about the Medicaid Task Force. And I'm also going to post this website to the Texas Silver-Haired Legislature on my website so people can check out more about
it. Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate it. We appreciate
that. Well, thank you
that.
Very much, Betty. You have
oh,
a good night.
You're quite welcome, and thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Stick around, and after the break, Dr. Kathleen Hudson, founder of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation, will talk about Texas music, and I will finish up with caregiver stress. So come right back.
Thank you.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show. Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years on Blog Talk Radio and on live stream and podcast at drmarakarpel.com. And before we go to Kathleen Hudson, who is on the phone, I just want to quickly wrap up about the caregiver stress. And I will be talking about it in more detail on a later date, but I want to mention to caregivers who might be listening that one way of reducing caregiver stress, and a very important way, is to find out about all the caregiver resources that are available to you. And the agency that Betty Streckfuss just spoke about is an excellent resource, and it is national. It's anywhere that you are, there is an area agency on aging in your area. So I suggest that you Google area agency on aging with and then put in a search for your county, and they have tremendous amount of caregiver resources. You can also go to the website of the National Family Caregivers Association for more information about resources in your area, and that is thefamilycaregiver.org, or you can send an email to them at info@thefamilycaregiver.org or call them at 1-800-896-3650. That's 1-800-896-3650. And I will post that information on my website, so you can take a look for that. That will be on later tonight. And so now, joining us on the phone, another guest who has been on this show a few times while we were on Austin Talk Radio, founder of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation, Dr. Kathleen Hudson, is joining us to talk about Texas music. Good evening, Kathleen. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back. I've had a couple of interesting evenings with Texas Music, and my music foundation has some projects ahead, and I just walked in the house.
All right. What's been going on?
Well, I had a chance to showcase a band, the Fred Eaglesmith Band. Now, they tour all over North America, and he's from Canada, but he used to tour with Texas artist Robert Earl Keen, and he is also touring with an Austin singer, Tiff Ginn, who used to be with the Ginn Sisters. And so they asked me if my foundation would showcase him on his Texas tour in Kerrville. So I did that last night, and I'm just a new fan. Everybody who follows Fred's music is called a Fred head, but I'm a new fan, and I just had a great time. It's an old-fashioned, true rock show, and Fred travels in a blood red bus. I think it was a school bus painted red, and Tiff drives the other bus, and they had this traveling steam show going all over North America. And it was so much fun to bring him into the university and showcase him in our coffee house space. And it was intimate. We got to know the band. And I'm still excited about it today. But I've been listening to his new CD called Tambourine. Mm-hmm. And he's a phenomenal writer. He's got a song, What It Takes, and he says things like, I'll run into the sky until it breaks, if that's what it takes. And I love words, so I just had a really great time getting to know the band, and I was looking at his touring schedule, and he's back in Toronto at the end of March, and he's got about four more gigs in Texas. And so it was a kind of a branching out for my foundation.
Yeah, it sounds
great. Showcase them because they were coming through. And our mission statement is to preserve and perpetuate all the traditions in Texas music. And right now we have a program where we're sending music into nursing homes. And I heard you talking about the caregivers earlier. And there's a center in Kerrville called the Dietert Adult Center. And they have a program to give caregivers a break. It's not exactly adult daycare, but they do have a program where the caregivers can come by and get some training and some relief and some help, and then they can also leave their person there if they need a break. It's really
like a respite.
And my foundation participated with the Dietert Center, and we had performer come in and raise some money for that. So we're involved in sending musicians into the schools, and we have educational programs, and now we've got this new one going into nursing homes, and we have a coffee house series, and we've just started a new summer series. So that was teaching at the university full time.
You're busy.
Involved. Understatement,
so,
right?
Is there a calendar for people to come and hear the music in your coffee house series or your summer series? How can people access?
You know, we've got it out on Texas Public Radio, and we've also got it on our own website, and of course Facebook pages and groups. You know, the whole bit. But our website is TexasHeritageMusic.org. And our next coffee house, which is a free event, is next Wednesday, March the 5th. And we're showcasing a spectacular woman to celebrate Women's History Month. And her name is Patricia Vaughn. And she was a model in New York for a while. She's toured Europe. Her brother, Robert Rodriguez, is a filmmaker who did one of his movies was Once Upon a Time in Mexico with Antonio Banderas.
Yes, everybody knows Robert Rodriguez. Yeah.
Fabulous
so this is
filmmaker.
His sister.
Uh-huh.
And
he used one of her songs, Tríame Paz, in his movie Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Okay.
And she's also got music in Sin City and some other movies and so we're real lucky. She's in town. She's going to come down from Austin, and she's going to perform. She dances. She brings castanets, and she sings in Spanish, and she sings in English, and she does rock and blues. And it's Wednesday night at the university from 7 to 9, and it's free. It's a project of the Texas Heritage Music Foundation.
And what university is that out there?
This is Shriner University. We have about 1,100 students, and it's liberal arts, 90 years old. It's on land donated by Captain Shriner. It's not associated with any of the Shriner groups you may know of. This is a family name. Captain Shriner donated the land, about 50 acres, and it's associated with the Presbyterian Church. And, you know, during these hard times, we just keep growing. When I started there 27 years ago, we had 600 students, and now we have 1,100. I think they're shooting toward 1,200, 1,500, and it's going to stay that size. Yeah. And I teach four classes there. Love it.
In music history?
Not really. I teach English, and my composition class, I'm in the English department, but they write about Texas music. And my foundation is located on the campus now. I moved it there in 2004.
Great.
Yeah.
So now this coffee house series, is it every Wednesday or just
No, it's
once
a six-part series. It's the first Wednesday of the month. And the last one during the spring semester will be April the 2nd.
Okay. And so it's
until
April.
And that
will
be lyrical hip-hop, spoken word, slam poetry.
Nice.
Featuring a hip-hop artist named Seth Law from Austin. Yeah, so a lot. I strive for variety, diversity.
Yeah, that sounds like you have a lot of variety. When people think of Texas music, they don't think of hip-hop and spoken word, but that's part of, you know, are the diversity of the cultures in Texas.
Yeah. And some people don't think of Beyonce and the Eagles at the same time.
It's all part of Texas music.
Arnett Cobb from Houston. It's all Texas music. And so I've made sure that the coffee house is very diverse and that each month we look at a different genre. And we did blues and jazz during Black History Month in February. But
Great.
I also do a huge event in September with about 50 performers, and it's free all day. It's aimed at education. We invite all the schools to come and bring students, and I call it Another Way of Learning Using Stories and Songs. And that's a huge annual event. We work on it all spring and summer, and we have sponsors and all different kinds of performers. We've discovered a new young gospel band from Fredericksburg, Four Proches, P-R-O-C-H-E-S, and they're all young members of the same family, and the harmony's beautiful, and we're going to showcase them this year along with a lot of others.
So what's the date on that? It's September?
Yeah, that's the last Friday in September. I think it'll be the 26th. Whatever the calendar says, but the last Friday.
Right.
And we have a special concert with our own dear Terry Hendricks and Lloyd Maines, and then she will stay over Saturday and do a songwriter's workshop. And actually, your show is the first announcement of that. There will be limited space at this songwriter's workshop to work with Terry and Lloyd. We don't even have the information out yet. But your listeners could get a heads up.
So that will be the last Friday, the last Saturday in
September? Her workshop, and she'll do a concert Friday night.
Okay. And for people to sign up for that, they would need to go to your website?
Yeah, we don't even have the information up yet, but they could certainly contact me and say they heard it on your show and they want to be sure they get their name on the list. It'll be very reasonable. She's easy to work with, and come to Kerrville, spend the night, see the concert. In fact, come down and spend Friday-Saturday deal.
And Kerrville is known for its Texas music.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, we're coming up on the very famous Kerrville Folk Festival. And, I mean, everybody who's anybody has played there. Daryl Royal sat on the front row with Willie Nelson, and Hondo Crouch was there. Jerry Jeff Walker's played. We have a theme song at the Kerrville Folk Festival called Heal in the Wisdom, and it was written by a wonderful writer and performer named Bobby Bridger, and he's also an artist, and he's going to come visit my classroom on March the 19th.
Okay.
You know, when I start talking about this, it does sound like a lot.
It is a lot.
I know. I was thinking, my goodness. No wonder I'm home on a Sunday night resting. Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I have two books on Texas music where I collected interviews, and I'm probably getting ready to revive that oral history project and take a sabbatical from teaching and go back out, you know, talking to the musicians, because that's part of my research.
Right, right. So, and how can people find your books? Because
I've seen something
about them. It looks really interesting.
Well, my own website, KathleenHudson.net, has pictures of both of them, and they're both available with the University of Texas Press. And right now, when you order them from the press, they're print on demand, so you can get a discount. I have some of the first edition hard copy still, but it's easy to find, you know, KathleenHudson.net.
Okay. And if people want to find out more about all of this music that you just talked about or sign up for the Songwriters Workshop, how can they find out?
Well, probably the easiest way is through the website, TexasHeritageMusic.org, and just go to Contact Us. Another way is just to email me directly, Kat, K-A-T, at TexasHeritageMusic.org.
Okay.
I heard this on the show. I want to get involved, get on our mailing list. We're open to membership. You know, an organization like ours needs members, and we have members from outside of Texas as well. What is
Great.
Your listening audience? You know, there's a lot of interest in Europe on Texas music.
Well, you know, I don't know who's listening yet until they get in touch with me and let me know. Listeners, let me know you're listening.
Yeah, well,
tell me who you are.
Be sure you let me know. You know, we can list it on our Facebook page, too. And
oh, yeah.
I think I did. Yes. I think I did list the link there.
Oh
tonight.
Yes, I will. I'll send you the link of the podcast after the show, so your followers can hear the show.
That would be
and,
great.
And I'm going to post everything on my website, all the links that you gave me. So if listeners heard you but didn't get a chance to write it down, they can just go to my website, drmaricarpel.com, and everything will be there. Later tonight or early tomorrow morning.
Okay, that sounds great.
So thank you so much, Kathleen, for coming on the show again. I look forward to having you back on the show to give us an update. And,
thank you. We'll have the Kerrville Folk Festival the last week of May and the first 2 weeks of June, and there will be Judy Collins is coming to town and all kinds of great stories.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, get some rest. Sounds like you're very busy. And next time you come on the show, we'll Larry Cohn join us and say hello.
Larry's going right now?
Yeah, he'll pop on and say hi.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so I'll stay on?
No, not tonight. The next time you're on.
Oh, the next time.
You're on.
Okay, well, hi, Larry.
Well, all right. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
You have a good evening. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay. So we've come to the end of the show already. Another 2 hours have flown by. It goes by so fast. I want to let you know what's coming up next week right here on Dr. Mara Karpel in Your Golden Years. Tune in next Sunday, March the 9th, again at 5 p.m. Central Time, when I will be broadcasting right here in beautiful Austin, Texas, with another great lineup of guests, including Joy LaVerde. She has been featured on the Today Show and in the Wall Street Journal. She's a speaker, spokesperson, and author of the best-selling book, The Complete Elder Care Planner, Where to Start, Questions to Ask, How to Find Help. And she will be talking about her book and about managing the care of your aging family. And Laura Gelizunas will be back to report in from the retirement paradise south of the border, Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And also local and national musician Sharon Bourbonnais will be joining us. She's been on the show a couple of times before, and she has some interesting stories to tell us now that she's returning. And we will have more. We always try to pack in a lot on this two-hour show. So please join us. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from tonight's show and all of the website links, and phone numbers, and if you want to find out what's happening on future shows and become a sponsor, go to my website, drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. That's drmarakarpel.com. And also be sure to follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. Tonight's show was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by Sonia Das, the Bra Lady, and by Live Oak Legacies. Special thanks to my guests, Jim Morris Hicks, Betty Strexus of the Texas Silverhaired Legislature, and Kathleen Hudson, Dr. Kathleen Hudson. And thank you to Art, and especially thank you to Russell and Crystal for doing the production engineering this evening. Thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night and inspiring week. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com. Any guidance offered by Dr. Karpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Karpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.